She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And trust me when I say this show will give all of us quite a bit of really important information to think about long after the show is over. We're going to talk about our heads and our hearts and about how we connect the two. So let me first start by thanking, excuse me, got something in my throat, which of course doesn't happen until I get on the air. Our show today is made possible due to the generous support of the Habitat for Humanity. They truly give people in our community in Tucson and around the country, hundreds of other communities around the country, a hand up, not a handout. We thank them for their support and for all they do to make our community and our planet stronger and more sustainable. So let's get on with the show. As they say, the name of our show today is Cultivating Women's Leadership. I am truly honored to have as my guest today, Nina Simmons. She is an award-winning social entrepreneur and visionary thinker and the president and co-founder of Bioneers, an innovative nonprofit educational organization that highlights breakthrough solutions for restoring people and planet. She is also the founder slash director of Women's Leadership Initiatives. We're going to talk about that. Nina, a warm welcome and thanks so much for taking an hour out of your very, very busy schedule to be with Mrs. Green and our world.
Thank you, Gina. It's a treat to be with you.
So the best place to start is always in the beginning. Let's start at the very beginning of Bioneers. It was over 26 years ago, or just about, where you and Kenny, your husband and partner, Kenny Ausubel, had a vision for starting Bioneers. What was that vision? And what did you help bring about?
Well, you know, the truth is that initially starting Bioneers was Kenny's vision. And it came to pass because we were at that time running an entrepreneurial social profit startup called Seeds of Change. And we were both learning hand over fist about biodiversity and about the challenges to both our food system and our living systems. And as Kenny, who was a journalist, was researching, he kept finding amazing people who were doing extraordinary things, many of them modeled after nature's own systems or inspired by nature. And one day he was in a hot tub and he was talking to a friend and telling him about all these remarkable people he'd found and bemoaning the fact that no one knew about them. And his friend in the hot tub said, "Why don't you have a conference?" And Kenny said, "Well, I've never been to a conference. It sounds boring. Why would I do that?" And the friend said, "Here's a grant. Have a conference." And Kenny came to me because I had a background in theater production. And I really believed that arts were a very important way to change people's mindset and hearts. And so he came to me and he said, "Will you help me produce this conference?" And I also had never been to a conference, which in retrospect was a great blessing because we didn't have any unlearning to do. Right? And so we made it up from scratch, and we started our first Bioneers conference in 1990 to feature the voices of these amazing, innovative leaders that no one had heard about, that we knew that if more people knew about their work, they would get excited and get more inspired to engage fully in the great work of reinventing our civilization so that we can live in harmony with the earth and each other. So that's kind of how it started. And of course, being so long ago, it's been through much, much evolution since then, Gina. And I have to say I have grown into my role as a full co-founder as I have really informed and co-created the evolution of Bioneers ever since. And so for the first 3 years, we were in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where we live. And then after that, we moved it to the Bay Area. and it has grown into an annual three-day event that attracts over 3,000 people a year, and that has been, I think, really had an influence in terms of lifting up some of the most exciting, most promising breakthrough solutions, both environmentally and socially, so that more people know about them, they gain more support and resources, and they become more of our more mainstream kind of dialogue.
And in terms of the Bioneers experience, I've only experienced it once, which makes it really important in terms of my what I bring to the party for this interview. But what I observed, and I have been to many conferences at my ripe old age, was a very clear and refreshing experience about what I would call the integration of thought. You might call it cross-pollination of great ideas and best practices. But there's in the world of environmental education, there's still a lot of the silo effect, where the energy people don't talk to the water people, who don't talk to the food
right.
people. Was
right.
it intentional from the beginning to really lay the foundation for cross-pollination or integration of thought?
Well, I would say yes, absolutely, it was intentional. And I would actually up the ante a little bit on your question, Gina, because I think it was not only intentional. Like, when we first started Bioneers, we thought that the rivers people and the oceans people surely would know each other. And we were shocked to discover that they didn't.
They didn't.
You know, and that the forestry people and the soil fertility people, we thought, well, of course they'll know each other and maybe they'll even already be in partnership. But what we discovered was this immense factionalization within the environmental movement. And over time, our purview has really grown. I mean, even at the beginning, we recognized indigenous peoples as the first pioneers, as the people who long, long, long ago began figuring out how to live in concert with the natural world and how to adapt to climate change, and how to adapt to dryland agriculture, and how to have controlled burns in forests to help improve their fertility. So we always included a lot of indigenous voices in Bioneers, which in itself I think is different than any other environmental conference. But also, in addition to creating a space where we're fostering a cross-pollination of ideas and strategies, we also wanted to co-create a space where it's not only all about thinking strategies, it's not all about mental figuring out of what we have to do. What we like to say in Bioneers is no amount of solutions will be enough to transform our way of living without a change of heart. And so we've always sought to really integrate emotional intelligence and physical awareness, and even a spiritual consciousness throughout the conference. So while there's a very high level of curation around people who are, we consider to be really brilliant innovators, there are also brilliant innovators in matters of how we relate to each other and, you know, how we relate to this great unknown mystery that, you know, some that we have many names for, but that really encompasses a kind of spiritual relationship to whether it's Gaia or God or however one might relate to it, the unknown and the mystery and the oneness of which we're all a part. So that's part of what I really love about Bioneers and why I, back when we started, Gina, I could never have imagined that I would stay doing this thing for 27 years. But because it's so dimensional and it keeps evolving all the time, I love it dearly. And it's quite different, as you say, than any other conference I've ever been to.
And I guess I was searching for a word after I came back. And conference just doesn't quite cut it. So I think you guys need to get on that because we need to come up with another word.
It's
my next question. I made a joke a lot about I just want to live in this Bioneer bubble. because you're filled with inspiration and hope and empowering stories and things that motivate you, that inspire you to want to go out. So I talked about, I want to live in the Bioneer bubble. However, you do create experiences from the people that you gather that impact people more deeply, so deeply that we do want to leave and practice or share what we got to take with us for those 3 days. Do you have any idea how to answer that question? How do you intentionally and successfully create that?
Well, I'm so glad it worked for you, Gina, and I can't presume to think it's
really
going to work that way for everybody, because I've learned a lot of humility over the years. But what I can say is that we design Bioneers to be a whole system experience, and that part of why it seems to work so well is because it really relates to people on the physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual realms, which is our whole human experience. And, you know, the other thing that I've really learned about convening for a wide, wide range of participants is that, you know, Bioneers works if you're a right brain person or a left brain person. It is designed so that it offers options even if you're an introvert. You know, if you really love processing data and hearing brilliant minds speak about the most pressing environmental and social challenges, there are places you can hear that throughout the 3 days. But if you want an experiential kind of learning experience, then you can go to a council session, and there are other interactive sessions that you can be a part of. There's also arts and music and ceremony woven into it. So I'm not sure. We have long searched for a better name for it. Some have suggested Congress because, in a way, it's very inherently political.
Right.
In our orientation and our focus. It definitely, we bring a strong progressive lens to our work. But that doesn't do it for me either. I think we need a new name. So I would encourage anyone listening to email us with suggestions.
I'm going to work on that. It's like, because, Bioneers, there's a word that I have to explain to people what it means. And I said, well, it's like pioneers, only bio as it relates to our biodiversity, our earth, our biosphere. So let's make up a new word. I don't think there's one that works for it. And, you know, something really strange just happened, and I've never talked about it on a show ever. I'm not surprised at all that this is the time. But when I was preparing for the show, I named the show Cultivating Women's Leadership. What we named the show as a team was Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature. And I think that's so interesting that for the very first time, I think I had an intention about what I wanted to talk about, and I read your book. So I put that on there without even reading the great show notes that Kelly prepares for me. So it is a perfect segue, because I do want to talk about cultivating women's leadership, because with Bioneers and the message of a brave new world that we're helping to create, you had an experience 5 years after starting Bioneers, and I read this in your book, which we're also going to talk about, The Burning Times, and how it resulted in your adding to what you call a gender lens to your worldview. And I think this speaks to the traditional embedded beliefs about what's strong and what is weak. And how did that experience plant the seeds and inspire you to work on what I believe is now one of your biggest passions, developing women's leadership through your initiatives?
Well, thanks for asking, Gina. And here's what happened for me. And I love, but really your selections for titles were spot on.
I think it's going to be a long title, because it was both. And I decided I'm going to acknowledge that. It is both.
Yeah. Yeah, Bioneers is about a revolution from the heart of nature, and I believe that this giant gender rebalancing and reorientation that we're going through is essential to that and deeply connected to it. So let me see if I can explain how. As you so aptly noted, about 5 years after starting Bioneers, I was given a video to take home and watch. And it was called The Burning Times. It's about an hour-long video that is available for free online. It was made in the early 90s by a Canadian woman filmmaker as part of a trilogy that she made. And when I saw this film, it struck so deep to the core of my lived experience and my understanding that it altered my life path. It tells the story of the 200 to 300 year period in European history where, depending which historian's estimates you believe, somewhere between 50,000 and several million women were actually systematically hunted and persecuted and often burned for the supposed crime of being witches. And it was part of the Inquisition. And when I saw it, around our house, we started calling it the Hidden Holocaust of Women.
Wow.
Because I was so shocked to discover that such a major event had happened in human history, and I hadn't learned about it in school. You know, I thought, this is crazy. Why doesn't every kid in school learn this? And when I saw it, two other things happened for me. One was that for much of my adult life, I had been aware that I had this deep fear inside me, and I had no idea where it came from. But that there was a deep fear that if I stood up in public and spoke my truth, especially if it was a radical truth or something that was not commonly held to be so, then I would put my life in danger. And I had no rational reason why that would be true. But I knew that that fear was alive in me. And when I saw the film, it was the first time that it made any sense to me why I would have that fear. And I feel as though the legacy of the Burning Times actually lives in my bones. It's like an epigenetic inheritance that I believe all women and all men carry. And even though it's a story that has its roots in European culture, there are versions of it that have happened all over the world. And
in this country, I mean, really and truly, we hear about Salem, but when I read that in your book, it's like, you've got to be kidding me. I had no idea it was that big and that long and that awful.
Right. Well, and Salem was so tiny compared to what happened in all over Europe. Exactly. And you know, for me, the awareness that seven generations of children watched as their mothers and aunts and grandmothers and sisters were systematically tortured and burned was kind of huge. But the other thing that happened for me that was really a huge aha was that for the first time, I understood all of the challenges that we face ecologically as well as socially as making sense through one single lens. And the lens that I saw because of that film was the imbalance between the masculine and the feminine qualities in our social systems and in our policies and in our structures. So it wasn't just about women and men and women's leadership and women's wisdom going underground. It was also about our capacity as human beings to really integrate the best of our masculine and feminine sides within us for human wholeness. And it was just a giant epiphany, Gina. And as a result of that, I began a conference to explore that question about the imbalance of the masculine and the feminine, and also about what women uniquely bring to leadership. And then I assembled my first large gathering of women, which was pretty wild, called Unreasonable Women for the Earth.
Yeah, wish I could have been there.
Well,
that goes without saying.
I learned a lot from that one. And
the lens changed during that time, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. And then I started these small, with a colleague, Toby Hertzlick, I started small convenings for 20 women at a time.
Okay, let's hold on. We have to do a short break. And what a perfect segue when we come back. Cultivating Women's Leadership and Revolution from the Heart of Nature's. It's all about pioneers. Everybody, please stay here with me. More from Nina Simons as soon as we get back.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Pacific Time at mrsgreensworld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at mrsgreensworld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio app. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. We are a proud member of the Dream Vision 7, Glimmerglass, Green Radio Divas, Blog Talk, and Speak Up Radio Networks. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@mrsgreensworld.com. We'd love to hear from you. And now, more with Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks so much for being with us and being a part of this journey and listening to this show and learning and growing with me. I am in gratitude for this experience every single time, every single show. So thank you to my listeners, to my tribe, for being a part of Mrs. Green's World. And just another quick note and a shout out to Habitat for Humanity Tucson for their support of Mrs. Green's World mission and vision. They're doing great work and we appreciate them and their support. So the name of our show today is a really long one and I love it. We're just going to rename it the longest show name we've ever had, Pioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature and Cultivating Women's Leadership. They're inextricably bound. And so we have the best person to articulate that vision, Nina. And, you know, I want to make sure it is Simons, right?
It is Simons. Thank you, Gina.
Yes. Nina Simons. She's an award-winning social entrepreneur and visionary thinker and president and co-founder of Bioneers, an innovative nonprofit educational organization that highlights breakthrough solutions. And I want to that should be a hashtag. Hashtag breakthrough solutions for restoring people and planet. She is also the founder of Every Woman's Leadership and co-founder of Cultivating Women's Leadership. Nina's work currently focuses on, there's a long list, writing, speaking, and teaching about women, about leadership, diversity, nature, systems thinking, and restoring the feminine in all of us. Nina, thank you so much for joining us today. So let's talk about women's leadership. Why so vitally important now? Why women? Why now?
It's such a good question, Gina. I am going to try to respond with a combination of some citations and some story. I think that, you know, what's happening right now is that as folks are certainly aware, I imagine, there is a great upwelling of women's leadership work and awareness all over the world. And part of the reason that that's happening is because not only are we intuitively guided towards that, and are women in places like the U.S. where we are free to stand and speak our truth and lead, not only because we are called to serve a living earth and the most just and fair and equitable outcomes for people we know how to do, but also study after study is revealing these days that when more women lead, ecological systems improve, economic systems improve. In businesses where there is greater gender equity in the leadership, the bottom lines improve.
Right.
And there are researchers who have just recently shown that in peacemaking efforts around the globe, where there are more women involved, there is greater peace. So really, the data is revealing that that same imbalance that I mentioned earlier of the masculine and the feminine, where the feminine isn't adequately in phase and balanced, that imbalance is being shown by science and research and data to be a problematic factor in how we live on Earth and with each other. And at the same time, I think women have a deeply physical and intuitive connection with earth and nature and life systems. You know, it's no accident that most women know that at some point their periods will sync up with the moon cycles.
Right.
And, you know, the cycles of the moon affect the tides on this planet. And so, you know, I have been learning that in many indigenous cultures, women's moon time was seen as so sacred because women in their moon time are seen to have a particularly open psychic channel to connection with the earth. And so it's kind of revered and prior to colonization anyway, was deeply, deeply respected as a source of information. So I think there are many reasons, you know. And then there's the larger framing question of, this is bigger than just women. I think a patriarchal system has hurt men at least as much as it's hurt women. And really, we need to restore the feminine and reclaim a healthy masculine within us all.
And you can't, I just think that cannot be emphasized enough, the pressure that has been put on men for what is, you know, some ostensibly stereotypical role. And more than ever before, I see examples of men who are stay-at-home dads, because that's what they really wanted to do and that's what they loved. And there was a time when that was so frowned upon and so looked upon as weak and, you know, look who he married, those things that I grew up with. I mean, I was there when Ms. Magazine got started. So it was just, that just wasn't done. Men were the breadwinners. And it's a very short time culturally in our world, just a very, you know, 60, 70 years of where that came about. And Nina, I want to ask you this. What I was listening, what I was hearing when you were talking is, if you take the model of a family, when there is the balance of what I call the divine feminine and the divine masculine, and I mean that in such a real and not airy-fairy way, there's balance. And kids inherently go to their moms and dad for different things. That was my experience as a parent. It's what I observe. Is that part of what you're hitting upon, where if we took that example, we wouldn't have all men leaders? Because in a family, there's a partnership, and it's different.
I think that that's really true, Gina. And I think part of what you're talking about, of men being more comfortable being in nurturing parenting roles,
yes,
is due to generational shifts. You know, I think it's one of the most promising and exciting things that I see in my friends and colleagues and family members who are in their 20s and 30s, is that they're much more fluid about gender roles and dynamics. And that I think what we are in the midst of, which I think you're also alluding to, is a giant reinvention of what it means to be a leader.
Yes.
And what leadership looks like. Because again, you know, part of what I realized, I often sort of translate my own experiences and see if they're of value to other folks, and find that often they are. And when I started getting acknowledged for my leadership, I didn't like it at all. I really felt like, oh, don't put that label on me. It's dangerous. I don't want it. I haven't earned it. And so I entered a deep inquiry about why that was, because I understood from pioneers that fostering and inspiring leadership in everyone is the most important thing we could be doing right now. And so I thought, well, if I have this antipathy to being called a leader, and we all need to be seen as leaders, then I better understand why. And so I read many, many transcripts from leaders who had spoken at Bioneers, men and women whose work I really admired, to try to understand how they were modeling a new form of leadership. And really, you know, what it came down to in essence was that I realized we had inherited an unconscious but deeply ingrained model of leadership that is top-down, that's typically practiced by a single person who often engages in so much self-sacrifice that they burn out,
right,
and become a target. And that, you know, that that my mental model of leadership meant somebody who knew all the answers and who typically led in a way that was not that reinforced hierarchy rather than collaboration. And often that mental model were leaders who had been given a title or earned a graduate degree or had inherited wealth or one way or another were externally conferred with their authority. And what I found was that the leaders who I most admired, which are the ones that I featured in the Moonrise book, are those who led from the inside out, who really led because of their passion, because of their love of the natural world, because they felt that they couldn't sit by and not do anything. And most often, they entered into their leadership not being really completely sure whether they were equipped or not, but knowing they had to act. And then they modeled leadership in a way that was collaborative, that was comfortable with not knowing, that listened to the wisdom of their bodies, hearts, and spirits, as well as their minds. And so I think we're all co-creating that new leadership in this time of massive reinvention on Earth today.
And so many people just say things that we can't even put our finger on it. It's like the winds of change are blowing, and you can feel it, and sometimes it's really hard to articulate it. And I would really like you to share with us your perspective about, to the extent you can, because it's a very big question, what's happening around the globe with women and their leadership? And let me just kind of narrow it a little bit. At Bioneers, there were women whose lives are so beyond heinous that literally got out to come and present at Bioneers. And there was questions about, would they be able to get out and come and share their stories from places where women's voices are not heard? And we spoke a little bit before you know, we went on the air about it can be daunting for someone that does lead from the heart to hear the stories about women and what's going on around the globe. So what is the Nina perspective about women and their leadership globally?
Well, I guess what I would say, Gina, is that women are organizing everywhere on this planet. And part of what has really awakened in me in the last several years is how many people are living in abject poverty and in horrifying conditions, not only around the world, but in this country.
Right.
You know, the suicide rate is higher right now in this country than it's been in 30 years. And there are people living on Native American reservations where women and girls are being trafficked and being abducted. And I mean, there's a lot of horrifying conditions, actually, that people are living through right now, both here and around the world. And I just got back from we do a six-day training called Cultivating Women's Leadership, and I just got back from one that had the highest number of international women there than we've ever had before.
Wow.
And to give you an example, there was an extraordinary woman leader there who came from Ethiopia. And when she was growing up there, she became a social entrepreneur. And she decided, because there's so much poverty among women there, that she needed to create a business that would employ women. And she was so successful at it that she had 50 women employees gainfully employed. And then, because she was able to, she started teaching them women's empowerment and teaching them to stand up and use their voices and, you know, trust what they believed and what they knew to be true. And the government shut her business down because in Ethiopia it's illegal to teach women's empowerment. And since then, she is going back to orchestrate an extraordinary effort now with incredible relational intelligence that will mobilize a movement to end violence against women in Ethiopia. And I have no doubt about how successful she will be. And it was incredible to witness and be a part of some of her transformation, but also to witness how the difficulties and challenges and trauma she's been through have made her resilient and strong and wise. And so I think we're at the very beginning of a global mass movement, honestly, Gina. And part of what I feel like my life wants to contribute toward is helping connect up that mass movement across all the factionalized smaller movements that exist. You know, here's an interesting thing. There's a book called Sex and World Peace, and it was done by some very savvy researchers. And basically what they found was that the deepest bias in human beings around the world is that of gender. It is deeper than race. It is deeper than religion. It's deeper than class. It's deeper than ability. It's gender. And, you know, that is no small thing.
Wow. No, it is
right?
No small thing. Wow.
Yeah.
It's just like, this is the time to pause and ring the bell. Yes.
It helps explain why here we are in the 21st century with only 17% of our Senate and Congress being women. You know, it helps explain a lot.
And it's, you know, I just think with all that we know, and sometimes it's hard to know what we know, it is the most exciting time ever to be alive. So I do feel that,
yeah.
Even though sometimes after a show, I you know, put my head on the desk and say, oy, 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 there's a lot more work to do. But it is a very exciting and intentional time to be alive. And I feel the same way that you do, because I get to interview amazing people from all around the world about their vision and what they're doing to be a part of that important change. So since you just are on the heels of the gathering, talk to me about, is there an inherent recognition among women leaders of the ineffectiveness of conventional approaches, and are they helping to create new models? I mean, that was a really good example of, you shut me down, but I'm just down, not out. So she's,
right.
This woman's going,
I'm coming back.
Yes, I'm coming
and
back,
clearer.
And you know,
yeah.
Here
yeah.
I am. So,
no, there are. I recently attended a conference that was that gathered a combination of really innovative philanthropists and funders and movement leaders. And one of the things that I learned about there that I was so excited by is a collaboration among four nonprofits. And the collaboration is essentially to create a pooled resource to support grassroots women's leadership globally. And all four of these organizations have areas of expertise in grassroots grant making, and working with local people on the ground to inform that grassroots grant making so that it's going to the right people, so that it's being effectively used, all of those things. And it was so exciting to me, Gina, because it's so clear that we're in an era where collaboration is imperative, and everybody needs to kind of park their ego and their brand a little bit at the door so that we can partner for greater effect, because how nature works is through networks. And the more we can connect up, it's almost like, I think the most important thing we can do right now is invest in relationships and building connective tissue among all the disparate efforts that are going on so that we can have greater power together.
And get really excited about it. It's finding the common ground. And to me, it's an idea whose time has truly come. I mean, I think we're desperate for it, especially given the current political landscape, which in some ways is almost better to ignore for your mental health. But it's like, don't do that. Be a part of the conversation. Be engaged. Be a part of having your voice be heard. So there's a tendency on my part to want to go hide and go dark. But when I get that signal, it's the signal to really look at that and find my voice and speak louder and speak more intentionally. So it's an important time, and it'll shape our future. So we have to go. Go ahead. Because we're going to go to another break, but finish your thought, and then
I was just going to say, I want to push back a little on what you just said and say it's a both and, because we need many more women and people of color running for elective office at every level. You know, so our political landscape reflects our social and interior landscape. It's all one system. And so I think rather than hide from it, we need to engage with it. But we also need to be mindful of the fact that there are a lot of old systems that are dying and crumbling and decaying and getting more and more polarized at the same time as there's a new world being born.
And we want to be a part of that. What a good note on which to end. Before our last segment, everybody, we'll be right back with Nina Simons.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And the beauty of this show is that it gives all of us an opportunity to think a little bit more deeply, a little bit more consciously, to just listen into ourselves and how what's leading us. And this last segment with Nina talking about how important it is to, in with the political conversations going on, to listen and to learn and to know what your internal compass is telling you and have our voices be heard. It's a really important and exciting time in our history. So joining me for this hour is Nina Simons. She's an award-winning social entrepreneur and truly visionary thinker and the president and co-founder of Bioneers. And I don't want to go on and on about what I've said before because there's so much more I want you to talk about, Nina. And I want to talk about your book for a little bit, if we may. The name of the book is Moonrise, The Power of Women Leading from the Heart. And one a quote stuck out. It jumped out at me. I started, I underlined it, I highlighted it, and I'd love to read that because to me it's about strong and inspirational visions and the real leadership, and people talk about a lack of leadership. So the quote is, "These women and many men are leading as pathfinders whose vision and passion for a better world motivate others to act to help heal our collective home, the earth, and advance the common good. We may choose to risk reaching for our dreams, not only for the benefit of those around us, but because making a stand on behalf of what we most love, of the future we yearn for, is the most fulfilling, joyful, and meaningful way to spend our short and precious lives." That's a new kind of leadership. What does that look like? And is it easy for most of us to recognize it when we see it? That's the other part. It's like, do you feel it first or do you see it first?
Oh, gosh. I think we all perceive it differently, actually.
Good answer.
You know, true. It's one of the things I've learned about working with diversity is, you know, some of us are more audio, some of us are more visual, some of us are more kinesthetic. It's very hard to make generalizations that are useful. What, you know, one of the things that I have found really helpful in my own journey was I had a very wise teacher at one point who said, pay exquisite attention inwardly to what makes your flame grow brighter.
I love it.
And part of why she said pay exquisite attention is because sometimes it's a very quick moment. And it's just like this little spark. And if you're not paying exquisite attention, you could miss it, you know?
So say that again, because I want to try and write that down. It's hard to listen and write. Pay exquisite attention to...
to what makes your flame grow brighter.
Oh, my God. I love that. Okay.
And you know, we do a lot of work in our women's leadership trainings to help women zero in on what is that calling, that sense of purpose, or that unique assignment? Because each of us has our own very unique one. And I believe that, you know, the exciting path and the most fulfilling path is to find the place where each of our gifts and talents meet a need for reinvention in the world, with a discerning eye to what, no matter how often we do it, continues to give us energy and not deplete us.
Right. I love that exquisite attention and discerning eye. It's just about thinking just a little bit more deeply and lingering on the thought a little bit more and the power there is in that.
Well, and you know what I would add to that, Gina, is Carl Jung said that interiority is associated with the feminine and the exterior is associated with the masculine. So it helps to bring an awareness that we are all conditioned to be focused on external demands and external needs. And I think that's why the meditation movements and yoga and all kinds of inner work are also growing so rapidly these days. But so because we all have that inner bias, it's especially important to be conscious about attending to our inner world and how that informs us.
And, you know, a little segue, not really off track. I'm so proud of myself for not going off track too much in the show because I have a whirling dervish brain that's going round and round and round. But in this conference I went to this past weekend, Younger Next Year, a lot of conversation was shared about workplaces. And Nina, I didn't even think of this at the time, where so many of the big corporate giants and the small business owners are putting in rooms, yoga rooms, nap rooms, and they're bringing in people that are talking about mind, body, spirit, and mindfulness. And these are big, big, huge steps forward. And that is really an underpinning of incorporating the feminine, because that's not the exteriority. It's getting people to be quiet. When I read about nap rooms, I'm like, sign me up, because we're supposed to take naps. It's a really good idea. So that's another example of it. I love that.
It is. And, you know, it's one of the things that I have a deep inquiry into is how do we make privilege more visible? Because what I've discovered is that as a white woman who has the privilege of walking through this world with white skin, I've noticed that when you're on the side of privilege, of a privileged system that benefits you, it becomes invisible. And when you're on the downside of that same system, it's supremely visible. And so to translate that into gender norms, what I've seen is that men in leadership don't see how they're benefiting from a patriarchal system. And they don't even necessarily see that the system is biased toward masculinized behavior and away from, quote, feminine behavior. And so in large corporations, one of the things they're doing more and more now is hiring consultants to do work on diversity that's focused on gender so that they can attract more women and promote more women into leadership roles because the men at the top simply don't see their own bias.
It's really, I mean, and honestly, we don't, women don't either. It's like, it's so embedded in us. And what I love and am excited about the work of Bioneers and what you're doing with the consciousness of cultivating women leadership is really heightening that awareness, putting up our antenna, whatever we want to call it, where we're more tuned into how we show up in the world. I mean, that's what excites me the most because we all have those biases embedded in us. Like you said, I feel uncomfortable when I'm called a leader. And there's, you know, the Op-Ed Project, which is a whole nother story, but a national program dedicated to helping women find their voices. One of my friends that's in that said, this woman who she greatly admires, who's her coach, said, women are our own worst enemies in terms of really using that voice and finding our steps. So let's talk about when you have trainings for cultivating women's leaderships. What are some of the things that you try to develop about their abilities to lead? What kind of aspects or practices do you incorporate and why do you choose them?
Oh, gosh. Well,
there's a question, three parts.
But you can take it, Nina. I know you can.
No,
you
there
can
are
do
many programs. Yeah, I mean, the op-ed program is wonderful. And
it's
there's
wonderful.
Another totally wonderful. And so is World Pulse, by the way.
World Pulse,
which I would
another
encourage
one. Ring
people
the
to
bell.
Look up.
I remember yes. when that started. I do.
Yes. Oh. Well, it's huge now, and it's
huge.
Very important. You know, we do a lot of work on turning up the volume and our capacity to really witness our interior landscape, to become aware. You know, we say that leaders actually, to be good leaders, need to be most aware of our own inner blind spots and our own filters. That's what
it's
one of the great ingredients,
really
right, of a great leader. So we do a lot of work on those kinds of things, on social identity, on how to tell your own story, on valuing difference and diversity, and not just tolerating it, but learning to really appreciate and value it. We do some skill building work on how to engage with challenging conversations, because many of us tend to be so conflict-averse that we don't, you know, tend to engage in those. We put off and we avoid those conversations, and then they get worse. So we do some literal skill building that's in terms of behavior, but a lot of the work we do is about making the invisible visible and making the interior biases that shape our reality and the stories that we carry, which are often either self-limiting or self-expanding, making those conscious so that we can consciously grow ourselves. You know, we reframe leadership as an ongoing, lifelong process. And so I really hope that I am continuing to cultivate my own leadership until the day I die. So we develop a lot of practices and we teach practices that are intended to give women tools to continue to cultivate their own and each other's leadership. And meanwhile, we offer women a kind of embodied experience of what it's like to be in a field of tremendous diversity in many ways, not just ethnic and racial, but also by age, by discipline, by nationality, and experience how profoundly women have the capacity to grow each other's leadership. Because I have come to believe, Gina, that the greatest untapped resource in the world today is women's capacity to grow each other into greater and greater and more effective forms of leadership.
And you know from the bottom of your soul that I share that belief. It's like, I became so passionate about learning about and reading about and delving more deeply into Bioneers. And it's really strange because I just knew I wanted to go, and it's because of our friend Molly Stranahan,
yes,
who just
yes.
said, you got to go to Bioneers. And then I started telling people in my community, and they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're going to get to go to Bioneers. But that's part of the excitement of believing that never before have our voices and finding them has it ever been more important. What do you do about, what I call integrating the healthy divine feminine and masculine in these trainings and workshops? Because you are never about, nor is this movement about, exclusion. It's more of, like you say, the balance and the integration. Do you cover things like that in the trainings?
Well, we do. You know, it's a framing that's really important
yes.
to us.
Yes, yes. It's not a topic.
It's the recognition that, it's the recognition that as human beings, I want to have a toolkit that encompasses all of my, quote, feminine and, quote, masculine capacities. And I want to be able to draw from anywhere on that spectrum at any given time. And there is, you know, many, many of the women who we work with are mothers. And, of course, they have witnessed firsthand how damaging and difficult our patriarchal systems are for boys. And everyone is mindful of the shifts that are going on generationally and of the need to reclaim both a healthy masculine and a healthy feminine. You know, one of my favorite ways that I've heard it, Gina, is a woman leader who I've learned so much from, named Lynn Twist, who runs the Soul of Money Institute and Pachamama.
Yeah.
She says that indigenous peoples of the South say that the bird of humanity has flown on only one wing for far too long. And these times require that the wing of the feminine join the wing of the masculine so that the bird of humanity can gain its true capacity once again.
What a beautiful, beautiful metaphor. I mean, truly, really and truly, one that stays with you and lands deeply. Oh, my gosh, I love that. I'm going to take that one with me for sure.
Good.
So there's a you know, very little time left. And in this time, I would love your thoughts on Mrs. Green's world is all about preservation of the planet, and it has grown to encompass such a wide lens. My lens just kept getting wider and wider and wider. Mm-hmm. It started out with preservation of the rainforest in Peru after I visited there, and now it has grown so much more strongly to include the social justice aspects and the impact of fashion industry on women and children. In your mind, and from where you sit and your experience, why is the role of women and women finding their voices as important now when it comes to preserving this great planet of ours? Because that's what drives my boat every day, is we have a Mother Earth that we're abusing. We need to help her and show up as love in that conversation. So why do you believe, or do you believe, that it's more important now than ever before when it comes to preservation of the planet, the very, you know, the source of life?
Well, honestly, I think that if I had to distill down the two greatest challenges we face in terms of conserving our life support systems and the magnificence of Mother Earth, I would say that they are patriarchy and corporate capitalism. And I believe that women have a kind of fierce capacity to stand on behalf of the sanctity of life in a way that, you know, there are all kinds of amazing stories about how the women in Nigeria, you know, got Shell Oil to stop drilling there because it was destroying their communities and their aquifers and their men and their families. And they did it by doing something that in Nigeria is a very taboo thing. They bared their breasts.
Oh, my gosh.
And in Nigeria, that shamed the men so badly that, you know, this giant oil corporation actually shifted and left town. You know, something similar has happened recently with a river project in Honduras. And the great woman leader activist who led that was recently gunned down. But she organized all the indigenous communities who lived on that river. So women, I think what's needed most to help, I don't think we can save the earth. I think that's a misnomer. I think the earth will survive. She may
Truly.
Take millions or billions
Yes.
of years to recover. But to minimize the damage that we have already set loose on this earth, the most important thing is to mobilize communities and networks. And women have an innate, you know, through some combination of nature and nurture, and we'll never know exactly how much of each, we have an innate capacity for what I call relational intelligence. And that involves community organizing and network building and getting people on board to stand together to defy corporate capitalism. Because without that, I don't think we stand much of a chance.
And such good points about Mother Earth will be okay. It's the people on the planet that we are focusing on and want to help to bring about the much-needed change and to the joy of living. I mean, that sounds so pithy, but it's true. The joy of living and being on this planet and just being present every day and all that that entails. Nina, we are going to be out of time, but you get the last word, and I just get to say Ben Knight of Lumio is our next show next week, and I met him at Bioneers. So,
and he's amazing.
I'm so excited.
Well, what I wanted to say is I think that as women, we have an empathic window on injustice. And because of that, we have an opportunity to stand with our brothers and sisters our indigenous allies in this country and all over the world and in the global south, because what happens to them is happening to us.
What a way to end this show, everybody. Bless you. Make it a great green week. And Nina, thanks for showing up in my world.
Thank you, Gina, so much. Bye, everybody.